What we've been learning the past few weeks was with Teres Hakdama as a way of an introduction to come into the third Torah. There was another one or two pages, but I realized that it's time to start the Torah, the third Torah in Likutei Moharan. I want to get moving before Pesach to get into this Torah. The third Torah we're going to learn together inside. There's so many Torahs, Likutei Moharan. The third Torah, we've been talking about music and the Kayach, this of the Tzaddik, the sixth, the beggar, the ability to cure the wounds that come from the poison arrows of the king of impurity, and so on. And the Asar Minei Negina, the 10 types of song. How to revive the princess, that means to revive us, the Koyach HaNegina, the Tzaddik's Koyach HaNegina. We've been talking a lot. To come to the third Torah, many years ago, must be close to 15 years ago, maybe a little less than that. Maybe like 12 years ago. So, I was giving a shiur in Queens, and I gave a shiur on the Indian of music. And of course, it's still a tumult from this shiur that I gave. I get still sometimes people calling. You know, the fact that it's tape number 3, there's no argument if somebody just got that tape now. So they're upset about it now, even though it's so many years ago that I gave the shiur. But I it's the same feeling that I had then. If anything, it's stronger now. And even though many times I think, you know, if I would hear a lot of things that I said years ago, that I would want to pull them off the shelf, and it's already, in certain ways, already too late. The arrows were shot and they're out there someplace. And then I know that the things that I say these days, next year I'm going to regret, you know, having said these things now. But I never know what to do. I just daven that this should be said to the Shema, to try to say some words and to learn together the Torah of Tzaddikim. So back then, that talk that I gave in Queens was on the third Torah of Likutei Moharan. It came in response to many, many people many of my students then were involved in listening to Geisha music and listening to Jewish, non-Jewish music, so-called Jewish music. And over the years, those who are here know there's something that I come back to very often. I see it as being a very, very dangerous thing. And at that time, I said, you know, so many of the chevra are asking about this Indian of music. And it's important that we hear what the tzaddik says about music, and to learn the third title, Likutei Moharan, to have a little bit of an understanding. Nothing is stam, we think stam. Like so many people have asked me, what could be so bad? What could be so bad? I enjoy this music, I don't even understand, I can't even hear the lyrics, I don't know what the lyrics are, I just like the music, and so on. I personally believe a lot of the tzaros that we have now is the result of those sounds. Combined with, of course, other things, other factors, but the sounds that are coming from the world, and even from people who are Jewish, could be very, very damaging to the neshama. And by way of touching upon the inyan, so to learn the third Torah, obviously, we're just a little bit to scratch the surface. And that's all. We zeich to understand the right way. And if there are things that we don't, if there are things that we learn that we don't understand, or we think we understand and we don't agree with, then the ik is for a Jew to mevatel himself to what the tzaddik says. It's the ik is to mevatel himself to the Chut Tzaddikim and to the Ratzon Hashem. But I just want, by learning this, to have a little bit a little bit of a kezias, a little bit of an understanding of where Nigun comes from, and how we've already been learning the past few weeks about how a Nigun that's used in the right way has such an unbelievable koyach. The Nigun that comes from the wrong place has also an unbelievable koyach, a very, very destructive koyach. And if it in any way helps to understand, and if Allah has come of a karma, if it in any way will help to make any changes, either if anybody here has an ASR like that, or with children, grandchildren, whatever it is, there's a service from those Talmidim, from those years of Baruch Hashem. I have many, many families, and over the years many have said to me that it made a very big difference to them that they stopped listening to those things. It made a very big difference in their lives, and it's not a small thing. So we'll learn the Torah. We don't have to stay on so long. It's each one of these Torahs we could stay for years, just to introduce. Now, Baruch Hashem, recently, the Chevre in Breslov, and specifically my friend Rabbi Chaim Kramer, finished the first Chelek of Likut Amran. Has been translated completely into English. So I decided that it would make it a lot easier. I know you have Likut Amrans, many of you have Likut Amrans, but I decided, since it's not such a long Torah, I would photostat this way we could take advantage of, make it easier with English, and make it easier a little bit with some of the notes that are very, very helpful here. So this way we'll go faster, and then we'll be able to tie it all in Mishashem with Pesach. Sfira Sa'ayim and Shulis, everything here is all about Pesach and Sfira Sa'ayim and Shulis, we'll see Bez Hashem. So we could read it in English, and we'll do some of the notes. The important thing, whenever we've learned over the past couple of years a Torah from Likut Amran, it's always important to know why Rabbi Nachman said it. And this is such a schus that we have, that as I've said each time, that we don't have from other Svarim. Other Svarim, we don't know what's going on. We just have certain Torahs. We have Kedushas Levi, we have Ayv Yisrael, we have this Torah from Baal Tanya. If you want to know, to figure out, we figured out when that Torah was said, and then to go see what was happening at the time in the world, and you could make a connection. But by Rabbi Nachman, we have this chus of almost always having clear connection, spelled out, connection between what was happening and the Torah that Rabbi Nachman said, which was usually a Torah that was in response to something specific that was happening either in the world, the Chlal, or in the community, or among his Chassidim Befrat, or sometimes in his family. So we have this chus through Rabbi Nosson and some of the other Talmudim, mostly Rabbi Nosson, we have this chus of knowing the biographical background of each Torah. So before we actually start the Torah, let's read footnote number one, tells us how this Torah came into the world. This lesson was given on Shabbos on the 7th day of Elul, September 4th in the year 1802, in Ladizen, a town some 19 miles from Breslov. Rabbi Nachman had been accepted as the spiritual leader of Breslov, and this lesson was given en route from Zlatopolye, where the Rebbe had lived the previous 2 years. Everybody knows that Rabbi Nachman's journeys were filled with all kinds of mysteries, where he went from one place to this place, and how long he stayed in each place. So he had come from Zlatopolye. Zlatopolye had a very, very hard time. And he was on his way to Breslov. The lesson's main themes are song, holy and profane, the study of Torah, especially Talmud, at night, and judging people favorably. This teaching is a prime example of the Rebbe's ability to explain profound Kabbalistic concepts simply and within the context of our daily lives. While living in Zlatopolye, Rabbi Nachman had encountered unrelenting opposition, particularly from the Shpola Zaidi and his followers. Those who read through Fire and Water, or the other books that have been translated into English, or Chaim Aran, or Yimeim HaAnap from Rabbi Nelson. No, the terrible, terrible tsaros that Rabbi Nachman and his followers had, and then it was much worse by Rabbi Nelson, but because for Rabbi Nachman there was more of a pachet, but it became Rabbi Nelson terrible. The tsaros that they had from the followers of Shpola Zevi, Schusia Yerlina. And this is a very complicated parasha, a very mysterious parasha in the history of Chassidus, what the Shpola Zevi had with Rabbi Nachman. And the followers of the Shpola Zaydi, who were not the Shpola Zaydi, you understand? Nobody has a kash on Shpola Zaydi, it was a tzaddik yisad oilam. But the followers of Shpola Zaydi, some of them were extremely, extremely not Shpola Zaydi. So, it was a hard sugya. Koponim, he had a lot of tzaddik, David Nachman, is not Napoleon. Ladizen, some several hundred kilometers to the west, was very different. There he was received with considerable honor by the local inhabitants. As it happened that Friday night, one of the locals, a follower of the Rabbi, was making a Sholem Zocher. Many of the townsfolk were present, including Ladizen's cantor, the Chazan. Now remember, in those days, and this is not long ago, not long ago, this is how it was by Jews in every town. They had a chazan from the town. It was the town's chazan. So in this town of Ladizen, there was the chazan. So this chazan was there, who was expected to lead the singing at the celebration. Now the way it used to work in those days in Europe, in the shtetlach and the towns, was that the town's chazan was paid not only to daven for the Amid, but he also was responsible to be a Shalom Zocher or other things, a bris or other simchas. The chazan, his job included coming to this simcha and leading the island in his mirrors and singing the traditional songs. So the chazan was at the town's chazan was at the Shalom Zocher, and it was expected that he sing the cover of the simcha. However, being a follower of Rabbi Nachman's opponents, this chazan in Ladizen was from the side of the Shpola Zaydi. Even though in this area it was a lot better, there weren't so many of the chassidim of Shpola Zaydi, but still there were misnagdim to Rabbi Nachman that were there. So the chazan in Ladizen was from those who were opposed to Rabbi Nachman. So the chazan had taken a seat at the far end of the table and showed no intention of initiating the singing. So the chazan had to show up because it was a town, it was a Shalom Zocher, and he had to go to every simcha. That's his job. But the simcha was a simcha of one of Rabbi Nachman's chassidim, and the chazan had to go, but he went all the way in the back someplace and he didn't really want to start a niggun. So you see that we have a history of Narishkeit. It's not like it didn't just start today. Like, this stuff's going on. Like, you know. The Rebbe sent his host to find out why. So Ibn Nachman sent the Baal Simcha, his chassid, to go ask the chazan, how come he's not starting a nigun? No. So the chazan's answer was, in a typical cantorial way, I just don't have a voice right now. He doesn't have a shtim, a chomes can shtim. I don't have a voice now. Right, whenever a chazan, for whatever reason, either didn't want to sing, which is very, very rare, right? Whenever a chazan didn't want to sing, so it was, the way to say that was that I don't have a voice, and it's a cold or something, he doesn't have a voice. I don't have a voice right now, a chazan insisted. Even the threat of losing the customary financial remuneration made no difference. Now, If the chazan wouldn't sing by Shalom Zocher, it was deducted from his salary. Because he had achrayis to sing by everything, to start the gunim, and if that it would be deducted, or they would always get after Shabbos the Baal Simcha, which looked him a couple of rubles or something, a couple of pennies, if he sang at the Shalom Zocher nice. That was part of how he made his parnosah. So even though, I guess the Olam said to him, you better sing, you're not going to make, you're not going to get paid. So, it made no difference. He's not singing. He kept insisting he had lost his voice. So Rabbi Nachman said, then I'll just have to give him a voice. So Rabbi Nachman said, I'll give him a voice. The Rebbe counted when told the cantors the Chazan's excuse. Right? Nobody knew what that meant. Rabbi Nachman said, I'm going to give him a voice. I'm going to give him a call. Eitim le kol, I'll give him a call. A voice. In the meantime, others began to sing instead. So the Oilim began to sing. Later, as the celebration was about to conclude, Rabbi Menachem made a comment that left everyone perplexed. Quoting from Mishlei, he remarked, doesn't the Pasuk teach that anyone who keeps company with prostitutes loses his wealth, his voice? Says in the Pasuk, Roya Zonis Ya'a Bin Hoin, somebody who goes to these kind of women, he loses his wealth, Hoin. And Chazal say that Kabbat Hashem, Bahayna V'Grayna, that wealth, each person has his own wealth. A person has a lot of money, so that's a wealthy person, a pshat of a wealthy person. And you have another person who has a beautiful voice, he has the Anah Hashem, Bahaynai, Chazal Semi Grayna, with his talent that he has, with his singing. You might not have a lot of money, but if you have a beautiful voice, then you Anah Hashem with singing. So the Pasuk says, a person who goes to these kind of women loses his wealth. And Rabbi Nachman said over Chazal, his wealth, meaning his voice. So Rabbi Nachman said such a thing, that's how a person can lose his voice. The next day, Shabbos, Rabbi Nachman taught this lesson. On Shabbos, Rabbi Nachman taught this Torah that we're going to learn, the third Torah. Maybe it was Friday night that happened. Friday night that Nisa happened, the Chazan, and Rabbi Nachman said those words. And Shabbos morning, and Shabbos he said this Torah Gimel, and left for Breslov early the following week. The following Shabbos, one of the poorer residents of Ladizan also made a Shalom Zacha. So things were happening over there in the village, and there was a Shalom Zacha the following Friday night. This time the Chazan didn't even show up. This callousness incensed several members of the community, and they sent a delegation to bring the Chazan. People were getting upset with him. So they sent some of the Chevra from the Shalom Zacha to go fetch the Chazan, to go find out what happened to the Chazan. So that the first of all, insult because he's a poor man. So the Chazan didn't even come because he's a poor guy. So he probably wouldn't be able to give any money. So the Chazan didn't even bother showing up for the poor guy. So they went to send for the Chazan. It's a disgrace for the poor Jew not to have the Chazan singing. So this callousness and sense over the community, and they sent a delegation to bring the Chazan so that the poor man would not be embarrassed. But when they arrived at the Chazan's home, they were surprised to find only his wife there. The cantor had gone out, the Chazan had left, telling her that he was on his way to the Shalom Zacha. Now, how big do you think the whole Adizan was? You know, it's not a mahalach, you know, to go from one end of the village to the other. So they come there and they ask, and the wife says, he went to the Shalom Zacha. On their way back, the delegation decided to look for the Chazan at the home of his best friend. When they got there, however, they were again disappointed. The house was dark, and no one responded to their knocking. They were about to leave when they spotted the Chazan running out of the back door. For some time, there had been talk about the Chazan and his friend's wife, but the rumor had never been substantiated. This marishkeit was also going on, you see. The Chazan's friend had birds nesting near his house, and the Chazan attributed his frequent visits there to his desire to hear their melodious chirping. And Chazan have all kinds of strange things, so I guess people in the beginning believed that he was going there because there were birds over there that would sing, and the Chazan liked to go here. He liked the music, so this is also very much a part of this Torah. You'll see with the birds, it's unbelievable how everything ties in. So the birds are singing over this. The Chazan used to say he likes to go to his friend's house. In the meantime, what was happening is the friend was away, and then and this Chazan was carrying on with the friend's wife. And there apparently was a rumor already in the village for some time that the Chazan is congregated tzaddik. He's not a big tzaddik. Now, however, the truth was out. The news spread fast, and the Chazan fled from Ladizan in shame. After this incident, it was clear to the people of Ladizn what the Rebbe meant when he said that I'll just have to give him a voice. So what does that mean, I'll have to give him a voice? So that means, you know, that in Halacha, if there is a rumor regarding somebody's behavior, particularly a chazan, these are halachas in Shulchan Aruch, as far as a chazan, especially when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Kippur, these are halachas in Shulchan Aruch. Even if it's unsubstantiated, even though we don't have exact, clear testimony, but to be a chazan requires a very high level of much greater level of having not only a great voice and being pleasing to the people, but that his reputation should be free of any kol. It's called in halacha when there's a rumor. In halacha, it's called a kol, a voice. In other words, when things are being said about somebody, we're not talking about now whether they should, people should say or not, but when there's a kol, when there's a rumor that's spread, and again, we're not going to the halachas now, these are halachas in Shulchan Aruch, when there's a kol, when there's a rumor that has spread about a certain individual, depending upon the nature and the extent of the rumor, and then the Rav can try to clarify and so on, but it can disqualify a person for davening for the Amid. A regular Shabbos, and certainly when it comes to Rosh Yom Kippur, be disqualified. So now the Olam understood what Rav Nachum was saying, such a deep thing. The Chazan said, I don't have a voice, which means I don't have a kol. I can't sing right now, whatever, I have a sore throat, but he didn't want to sing for this best of the chas. I don't have a kol. So Ibn Achim said, I'm going to give him a kol, which means that it's going to be revealed that there is a kol, there is a voice. In other words, that the rumor is a true rumor. And that's what happened the following Friday night, that he was caught running out from that house. And now they understood, and why the Rebbe quoted the verse about associating with prostitutes, the woman that was not behaving properly. The town's inhabitants were awed by Rabbi Nachman's prophetic vision. Many became his followers, and inspired by this lesson, formed groups to study Mishnayos and Gemara nightly, which we'll see is an important part of the Torah, is the inyan of studying Torah Shabbat Peh at night. So this is the historical, biographical background of this Torah that gave birth to this Torah, the Maisa that happened with the Chazan in Ladizn. The next morning, that Shabbos, Rabbi Nachum spoke about music, and spoke about Chazanim, as we'll see in a few minutes. He spoke about the meaning of a Chazan. So he was explaining, Why is it that Jewish music is not like other music? How is Jewish music different from other music? Chazanis and Jewish music is different from other music. Just by way of background, before we start the Torah, let me just preface it by saying that in the Zohar Kaddish, in Parshas Pinchas, it's one of the longest parashis in the Zohar Kodesh, is Parshas Pinchas, and very, very, very big inyanim there. And Parshas Pinchas, the Zohar Kodesh says that there are nigunim, there are songs that come from the side of chesed, of loving kindness, from the right side of loving kindness, and there are nigunim that come from the side of Gevurah, that come from the side of the left side of Gevurah, of severity, of judgment. And there the Zohar is telling us, as the Svarim explain, that a nigun that comes from Chesed, a nigunim that we sing Shabbos, we sing by a Yontif, by a Chasna, and so on, when a Jew is feeling grateful for being a Jew, and he feels the honor of being a Jew and being a part of Klal Yisrael, those nigunim that Svarim say that come from the side of Chesed, those nigunim tell a person, the nigun tells a person that no matter what he's done in his life and whatever wrong there is, whatever misery there's been in his life, that he's still close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he should not be misyayish. And in the end, just like the princess in the story with the sixth dagger, with the water and so on, with the fortress of water, that in the end the poison will be removed and in the end you'll be healed. And there's nothing like a niggun from the side of chesed to revive a person, to give a person hope and nechama and tikva, comfort and hope. So the niggun comes from the side of chesed. It's mechazik in the person the belief that sof kol sof it'll be good, and he'll be good, and it will be good. All of that's in a niggun that comes from the right side of chesed. A niggun that comes from the side of gvura. Those, the Zohar Kodesh tell us, and the Swarm explain, those are the nigunim that are filled with sadness, with atzus, with yeyush, with giving up, with despair. All of the daigis, all worries, all the worries come out through these nigunim. All of the chesroinus, all that a person is lacking and missing, and all that is wrong with the world and wrong with oneself, all of these things come out from the nigunim that come from the left side of gevura, and they break the heart of a person and distance him from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is all included in the nigunim of the Rishayim that Reb Nachum is going to talk about that come from the side of gevura. There is a feminine quality in the world of evil which is called Lilith, which we're not going to go into. It's not really something that we need to go into, but it's from Chazal that there's a feminine koyach of evil that's been created in the world, a malach of that side, where in certain ways the dinim there, the gevuras and dinim there, are stronger than the satan, the side of Lilith. And Lilith is the cause of all yilala. Yilala means crying. Yilala means wailing and crying. It comes from that sound of the left side of the nigun, come from the left side, which Reb Nachum is going to talk about. The koyach of music that comes from Lilith, which is the side of crying, yilala, songs that cause sadness and despair. Even though they might sound like they're happy, if you hear, when you're driving or something, you hear these songs, you don't just hear them, the car starts to shake. You hear such things and it sounds like it's, you know, some kind of a happy, you know, beat or something. It's like it's moving at a certain pace. But the songs, not just the lyrics, but the ones who made the songs and the songs themselves, are all about dying and death and killing and misery and poverty and drugs and abuse of women and all kinds of crazy things. The Gemara says in Chagig an amazing thing. Gemara says in Chagiga, over there, it talks about Achim, Tasayim. The Gemara talks about what happened to Acher. Now you remember that Acher was the great Tana before he went away from Yiddishkeit. He was the Tana, he was Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, he was the great Talmud of he was the Rebbe of Rabbi Meir. Elisha ben Avuya was the Rebbe of Rabbi Meir. The Gemara there asks, why is it that the Torah that he learned didn't protect him from such a downfall? This man was from the Gedolei Hadar. We're not masik what that means. We don't understand. At the time of the Tanoim, he was the Rebbe of Rameya. We can't be masik what that means. The Chofetz Chaim and Moshe, 1,000 times rolled into a with everything. He was a Tana. the Gemara there is, Chazal was very disturbed by the fact that how can the Torah that he had learned, and all the Torah that he taught, in the end, didn't save him from this terrible, terrible collapse and descent into the world of impurity. So the Gemara says a fascinating thing. The Gemara says, Zemar Yevani Leposak Mipume. He used to always sing Greek songs. Zemar Yevani Leposak Mipume. He used to listen to that station. He used to listen to the station. The Gemara says that's why the Torah was somehow, the sound of Torah was drowned out. It says, Zemar Yevani Leposak Mipume. He used to sing Greek songs. Zemar Yevani, I'm sure those songs are not anything as good like this stuff now. The Zemar Yevani Leposak Mipume, the Gemara says. And these songs, the songs that are filled with Yalala, with sadness, with crying, with depression and despair, that caused Acher to lose faith in himself and faith in Hashem's Baruch, and he caused him to listen to the sound of Hashem saying, I don't want you back, and so on, that we spoke about many times. And the Nigun of the Rasha that Rabbi Nachman is going to talk about, the Nigunim of the evil ones, that come from the side of Gevura, that come from the side of impurity, create sadness, sveikas, all kinds of doubts in a person's mind. The opposite of the Nigunim of Chesed. The Nigunim of Chesed are chazek, strengthen one's emunah, and remove sveikas, remove doubts from a person's mind. When the Nigunim, Kedusha. And since we have such an unbelievably powerful weapon, either Latoiv or Lara, in holiness, or God forbid, in the opposite of holiness, it's very, very important that we understand. What that means, and it makes a difference who's singing the Naguna, who the Bali Nagina that we listen to. And I'm not only talking about Goyim, well, I have about Jews. Rabbi Nachman was talking about a Jewish chazan. He probably had a nice long beard. He probably put out a lot of CDs and everything. I had big chalamoid concerts, whatever. And I, unfortunately, there are some, I don't know some, but I know for sure that I mentioned a few weeks ago, there's one for sure that's concerts all the time, that is bavust, that it's very well known among the musicians themselves and among other people and the police in Yerushalayim and other, that he is a Raya Zionist mamish. He's up to much worse than the chazan over there in Ladiza. Much, much worse. And he still goes around singing and he closes his eyes and shakes and that. Hashem should guard us and all children and grandchildren from such neguna. But to understand where a negun comes from. What does it mean? It's not so pushing. Even a chasna, you see the chasnas they have, even sometimes the musicians, they're not even Jewish. A lot of the musicians, they're not Jewish. They're playing Jewish music in the chasnas. They had even by klezmers in the old days, there were sometimes, it was not usual, but there were some. They were not Jewish, they were playing with the guys. So how does that affect it? It's just like an accompaniment. Someone's on the drums or someone's on one of the instruments. Does that affect the whole nigun? He's a very, very big inyan to understand. Each person will take practically what he wants to take out from it. Let's begin the Torah. Those of you who are familiar with the Likutei Moran, you know that at the beginning there are a number of Torahs that are built upon the amazing Agadatas in Bava Basra, the Gemaras in Bava Basra, and Ayin Gimel, Gemaras that tell us unbelievable things that Rabbah Bar Chana saw. that a Vilna Gaon has Pirushim that are translated. Also, there's in English a book from, on some of those. And the tzaddikim, Mashur, and all the tzaddikim explain what was Rabbi Baba Chana talking about. Rabbi Nachman's Torahs here are explaining these amazing things that Rabbi Baba Chana described, that are obviously talking about very deep secrets of Torah. And even though Rabbi Nachman only comes back, he usually only comes back to the actual Gemara at the end. But the entire Torah is to solve the mystery of what Rabbi Baruch Hanna was talking about. So, you see, the Gemara there is Rabbi Baruch Hanna recounted, I myself saw the Akrukta that was as Akra de Hagrinya. In other words, you see that brings the Rashbam. We don't have Rashi over there, as you know, on that. The Rashbam explains, Akrukta is Aramaic for frog. So Rabbi Baruch Hanna said, I myself saw a frog that was as Akra de Hagrunya. It was as large as the entire city of Hagrunya. I saw a monster, a giant frog. He said, I saw myself. It was the size of the city of Hagrunya. And how large was the city of Hagrunya? So Rabbi Baruch Hanna says 60 houses. A serpent came by, also Tanina and Bala. A serpent came by and swallowed it. Meaning a serpent came by and swallowed this frog that was the size of the city of Hagrunya. A serpent came and swallowed it. A pushkansa came by and swallowed the serpent. What's a pushkansa? So the Rashbam says, a female raven, a bird, came. It sounds a little bit like Haggadi, right? So first there was this big frog, and then a serpent came and swallowed the frog. And then the pushkansa, the female raven, came by and swallowed the serpent. And then it ascended and perched on a tree. Now, Rabbi Baruch Hanna says that it went up and it sat on a tree. Tochazi kamanofish chele di ilona. Come, see how great the strength of that tree is. Could you imagine such a tree? Rabbi Baruch Hanna says, I saw this. That this pushkansa that swallowed the serpent, that swallowed the frog that was as big as the city of Hagrunya, was sitting on this tree. Tochazi, come and see the strength of that tree. That's the Gemara. And Rabbi Nachman says on this, he only comes to the Gemara later on. Just to read at least the first sentence, which is called in Lashon HaKodesh. Hinei misha shemein aginim anagin rasha, kosh shaloi la'avodas habari. Uchisha shemein mim anagin kosh v'hogun, as I toiv lo'i k'mosh yisbach. He says, behold, when someone listens to the singing of a singer who was wicked, a rasha, it is detrimental to his serving the Creator. It hurts his serving Hashem. But when he listens to a singer who is virtuous and worthy, it helps him, as will be explained. It's important that we read the second note before we go further, because this is really Rabbi Nelson's introduction to help get us ready for the entire Torah. And there are some Kabbalah in Yonim in this Torah, but we're not going, we never go into the Kabbalah, just a basic understanding on the surface of things that Rabbi Nelson helps us with, and is brought down here in footnote number 2. So if you take a look, but when he listens, it helps him. The following is Rabbi Nelson's explanation of the concepts of voice and speech. obviously, in order to understand the effect of a song and how a song can have such an effect on a person, you have to understand the deeper meaning of a voice, of what it means to have a voice, to lose a voice, what the voice is, and what speech is. His insights are fundamental to understanding the thrust of this section in particular, and the entire lesson generally. So the lesson writes, the voice is an extraordinarily potent means for arousing a person from spiritual slumber. Waking up a Jew is the voice of the shofar. It's not words, it's a sound. The voice is very strong to wake a person up from spiritual slumber. This is the import of the teaching. The voice arouses concentration. What we have from Chazal and the Rishonim, that the koil is ma'orer kavana. That when a person davens out loud, he could be saying the same words whispering, and it doesn't have the effect. But when he says those words with a koil out loud, it's ma'orer the kavana. It awakens the kavana. It arouses concentration. Yet the main arousal of one's mind, one's intellect, comes when a person's heart is aflame with a burning desire for holiness. For when the mind is bound to an inspired heart, the result is holy speech. That's the formula, is always true. When the mind is bound to an inspired heart, when the heart is on fire and the person's thoughts, the mind connects to the burning flame of the person's feelings, of the person's heart, the result is holy speech. Nafshi yotze bedabrei. When the mind and the heart combined together, so then what comes out is the voice of holiness. This is, as it says in Tilim, in Lamites, my heart was hot within me, and my contemplation of fire, and with my contemplation of fire blazed, I spoke out. Cham libi bekirvi, hagigi yitivar esh, divarati b'lashayni, it says in Pasuk. Cham libi bekirvi. When the heart of a Jew is on fire, then bahagigi tivar esh, when I think, if I allow these feelings to penetrate into my mind and I think about these feelings, then my contemplation of fire blazed. With my contemplation, then the mind is also set on fire. From the heart, it's set on fire. Begins with the heart, and it sets the mind on fire when a person contemplates those feelings. And then what happens? I spoke out. Dovra Mel says, Dibarati Bilashaini. I couldn't contain that. I spoke out. Thus, as important as the voice is, spiritual growth, on the left hand side, the spiritual growth, it must ultimately be harnessed with the power of speech. I mean, the Tachlis is to connect voice to speech, to words. We see then that voice can kindle a burning desire within the one who listens to it. It's a tremendous koyach of kindling a fire through the voice, through coming out from a person's mouth. That burning desire, for holiness or otherwise, manifests in speech. It could be a fire that is holy, it could be, God forbid, a fire that is unholy. Rav Nosson adds, holiness is an attribute associated with the world of unity. Holiness comes from the Alma di Yichud, the world of unity. Profanity, Tumah, is associated with the world of separation, the Alma di Piruda. When a person listens to holy song, we're going to see much more about this throughout the Torah. When a person listens to holy song, his arousal and desires bring him to unite voice with speech. The tachlis is that there should be a connection that flows from the heart to the mind to the voice and to the words and to speech. That's the connection, ultimately, to Maisa. I mean, to do the right things. But that connection from the heart to thoughts, to the voice, to the kol, to speech. So many years ago, when the shul first started, the shiurim that I gave on tefillah, on davening, I spent a few weeks talking about that connection. I think they're still around, those tapes, but I don't know what form they're in at this point. You know, but I spoke for a few weeks about the inyan of that connection of kol and dibur, of the voice and words, of crossing over from voice to speech. So we'll talk more about it over here. The alma de yichuda, the world of unity, is where a person feels something, thinks something, and speaks something. And all of that is consistent. It's all one mahalach. He's not echad bepev, echad belev, which is Chazal's description of the hypocrite, that he has one thing in his mouth and there's a different thing in his heart. The tachlis that a person should be miyachid, should bring about a unity between the thoughts, the feelings, the thoughts, and ultimately the sound that comes out from the mouth, and to be unified with the words of holiness, all flow together and come together. One of the great tzaddikim, in almost every Torah that he taught, speaks about this inyan. Mar Chadayev Harnstipler, in his Sefer Pele Yoyes, in the Sefer, don't put those papers, they're going to get lost. In Pele Yoyes, he wrote a Sefer. Mar Chadayev Harnstipler was the son-in-law of the Divrei Chaim of San Zerov, Mar Chadayev Harnstipler. You know, the Tversky's in Milwaukee and Denver, that's their Zayde. The Harnstipler was a grandson of the Mittler Rebbe from Lubavitch. He had this combination of, it was Chernobyl and Chabad. Everything was together, and also then they were married with Bobov and sons. And so the Torahs of Mar Chadayev Harnstipler is a goyim olam. So his Torahs are very, very fascinating, because the Torahs, there's a lot of Chabad Chassidus together with Chagas Chassidus. In the Sefer Pele Yoyetz, there's an old Pele Yoyetz, the Sfaradi, I'm not talking about that. The Pele Yoyetz from Mar Chadayev Harnstipler, I think we probably, it's out of print now. I think we might have one here. I remember getting it. I don't even see it lately. Maybe somebody liked it a lot. But it was here. So in the Pele Yoyetz, there Mar Chadayev talks kemat every time about unifying thoughts, feelings, and speech. Kemat every time is in that yisayit. He comes back to that yisayit and how to do it and to mechazik that inyan. But that's in Kedusha, that's very, very powerful. This enables him to come closer to God. I'm sorry, profound physia. So when a person listens to holy song, his arousal and desires bring him to unite voice with speech. This enables him to come closer to God. But if a person listens to profane music and song, but if a person listens to music and song that come from the side of Tumah, the song that draws him to the vanities and desires of this world, he separates voice from speech. This leads to his becoming distant from God. We're going to learn, this is just an introduction, I'm nothing, that when a person listens, we'll see why this happens, that when a person listens to music that comes from the side of Tumah, then Fakir, not only does it not bring him to Kedusha, of course not, but it draws him deeper and deeper into the fiery heart and desires of impurity, and it separates voice from speech. We'll see what that means. It makes a separation between voice and speech. That's why we always hear people saying, kids will say this all the time, because the parents will say, how can you listen to that stuff? Did you hear what that song is? So the kid will always say, I don't listen to it. Where is he singing? I just like the music. Whenever you hear that, It means it's time to turn off electricity. Something very dangerous. I'm just listening to the music. It's just the separation between sound and speech. And if a song, if there needs to be a separation between sound and speech, like for instance, like the kids tell me, you know, about these Jewish groups. If any of you ever had the misfortune of hearing some of the music that's coming out from some of these chavra, again, whenever I say, I'm sure they're all nice people. I don't mean anything, God forbid, against the people. I don't know them, and I'm sure they're nice people. I even met one or two of them. Whatever, they're not nice people, but whatever the hashpos that they had, that's their nisayin. People are talented; it's a very big nisayin. So that they have to go through that. But if you hear the kids have sung to me in the house, or they had played to me from something, one thing that came out is always you see is that there's a separation between voice and speech, which means, on the simplest level, they're singing psukim from Tanakh or from Zemirs, and the music has nothing on earth to do with the words that they're singing. Nothing on in the world. When you hear, you can't believe it. They apparently they already finished destroying the whole Tanakh with their music, so now they're moving on to Chazals. They started with Mishnayis and different things. And one of the kids played me some kind of a song on a Mishnah. The guy made a Mishnah, Ben Bagbag, something. He made the Mishnah. And you listen, I don't know. It's a pachad. And the Jewish people are buying this and they're blasting it in Yerushalayim on the street. These songs that are separating between sound and speech. The words have nothing to do with the sounds. The sounds are the sounds of the cars that are pulling up next to you on Rockaway Turnpike, Boulevard, whatever that is. And the words are the words of David HaMelech and the words of the Tanna. One thing has nothing to do. And you wonder, like, how did he? I mean, it's all a gag of it. All the music they steal. There's nothing original. But you think that at least a little bit he would stop and think, okay, I got it. I have like 15 sounds that I got it, right? So at least he would ask somebody, what do you think is a pussy that I could put into this stolen sound that would maybe fit with this? They don't even do that. They're just like, I don't know, it's like a girl. They open up Tanakh, and they open up something that says over here, okay, here it is. Eila told us no. Eila. There's nothing to do with like the pussy. I mean, this is what you see to say. It's a pachet. It's worse than it's just being silly. It's silly. It's for sure silly. It's embarrassing. It's immature. It's silly. Amarasis. But it's worse than that. It's very, very, very dangerous to persons of Eretz Hashem. These things. We'll see.